Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor. We've got a very special guest in here right now. We've talked about this a little bit before, about a project for a young veteran. His name is Forrest Perez. And Forrest, were you 101st Airborne? 82nd Airborne. All-American.
Oh, yes, sir.
And you served in Iraq.
Yes, sir.
Came back from Iraq. You're at Fort Bragg, I believe.
Yes.
And tragedy kind of struck. Could you describe what happened?
I was crossing the street and an intoxicated driver hit me and left me for dead in the road. And after the police officer and army veteran seen it happen and gave me life until the aircraft landed, he was in Chapel Hill.
And he saved your life?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you get through that, you come home, and your cousin or your aunt or somebody contacted me from the radio station, said, hey, we're looking to get a ramp built. Do you guys, because even on my Facebook right now, there's a ramp that somebody's, a veteran's donating to me to give to another vet. So that happened a lot, you know, a lot of times it happened, you know, somebody passed away and they got the nice ramp and said, hey, I heard you talked about that, looking for one. So we sent up some fellas up there. I think it was Mark Bonovitz came up and checked it out. And we all got together and said, you know, let's build him a house. And that's pretty much what happened. And I'm not trying to pound myself in the chest or anything like that, but that was quite the project, the way the whole community, and even your grandfather, I remember going into Shano with your grandfather to buy some more 2x4s or something, and he was all into it. What a great family and community thing that was, the way your community came together for that.
Oh, yes. Boy, it was so great. I can't even believe even the Navajo tribe from Southwest had people up building the house for me. Boy, it was so awesome to see the community pull together.
And this man right here next to me, Dave, call him Cowboy Dave. That's him in the picture there, embarrassing me by holding the plug to the circular saw when the newspaper wanted a picture of me working with some power tools. And there's him holding it, showing it's not plugged in. But Dave, what do you remember most about that project?
The amount of people that got together and volunteered to help out this veteran.
I mean, it was incredible, wasn't it? We'd show up and it's like, wow.
Yep, yep.
I mean, there were times I basically just sat in the sun and had a lemonade or something because there were so many people there, I didn't want to get in their way.
Well,
lemonade.
You did.
Was he drinking lemonade?
He was drinking something. Now, Mom, could you talk a little bit here about this whole process that you've gone through and the whole thing? Because, you know, here's what happens with our veterans a lot of times. And obviously yours wasn't, you know, from an IED or anything like that. But still, you're a veteran. You're still serving the Army when that happened and everything. And sometimes I'm afraid that, you know, for the time being, it's all, you know, glory and honor and patting you on the back. And then people kind of forget about you. But I don't think that's happened in this case. Do you, ma'am?
No. I think our community is a great community. We live in a small area. We live in Kachina. And we still have a lot of people that will come up and talk to Forrest. They remember him from school. They remember him from the accident. And there's always somebody visiting with us or talking with us or asking about him. So,
awesome.
Forrest, you seem happy. And tell me about how you look at life now. I mean, it's a little bit challenging. You've got a great disposition. I just met you this morning.
And you look good. I'm serious.
Right,
you
he does,
you
right?
You look great.
Thank you. Well, when I got home, I mean, sure, the accident was bad, terrible.
Yeah.
But I look at it this way. I got to know my nieces and my family. I got such a close bond with them now.
Right.
Would you have me build a relationship being home for this while?
Isn't awesome. That nice? That's
and
great.
What is it, your chief, what's the word, financial person for the Veterans Organization?
Treasurer.
Treasurer, that's what I'm looking for. Treasurer for the Menominee Reservation for the veterans. I'll tell you one thing about that area, though. It's mind-boggling. In fact, one of the guys, I can't think of the, I'm losing it. I can't think of the gentleman I interviewed. Okay, didn't need that, Jim. Korean War vet, and he's in my book, 50 Strong. And he said, I don't know if it was the governor or somebody up here one time, said per capita, there were more veterans in the Menominee Nation than pretty much any place else in the United States, the percentage of veterans. You guys just always, always have this thing of, you know what? We're serving our country.
Right.
Where does that come from?
We have a strong, because there's so many family members went before us. Yeah. That's what we're going to do, fill their boots.
Yeah, and that's what you do.
Oh, yes, sir.
That's what you do.
So you had other family that was in the military?
Oh, yes, my grandpa. And both my grandpas tried to join. And my great-grandpa, he was actually an immigrant from Mexico.
Wow.
And he was the Navy vet. That's where he got his citizenship. So I wanted to join. And my grandfather, on my mother's side, was in Germany. And four uncles. Wow.
When we were going to Shiloh that day, your grandpa was pointing out that in the park, there's that one gun, anti-aircraft gun, and he was talking about he used to man one of those, the kind you got there right in the park.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great, man. He was awesome. Told me all about bear hunting, everything I ever wanted to know about bear hunting.
I'm not trying to be a donor, but actually, that's when I lost my father. We were hunting, and he was getting the sickle around the truck. And the driver hit us and killed my father and put me back in the hospital for another month. Yeah, it was no fun.
Ma'am, could you talk about that? Because I can't imagine what you went through that night. Can you describe after everything that happened to Forrest, comes home, everybody's helping him, and tell him about this other tragedy that happened?
Well, Forrest and my husband, Derek Perez, were bear hunting, and they had just baited the bear, and they were waiting for the bear to strike the baits. And they had went through a dirt road, and there was a stick hung up under Forrest's truck. And my husband pulled over to the side of the road to pull the stick out of the bottom of the truck. And Forrest said, "Dad, there's a car coming." So I'll make sure my legs are, you know, underneath the truck while he was pulling the stick out. And this guy come along. We found later he was doing 78 miles an hour on this road and smashed right into him. Killed my husband, killed the driver of the other vehicle, left Forrest injured. He had a broken femur. And the guy that was a passenger in the other vehicle, he had a broken hip. And we, like I said, we have a small community. And my daughter's husband was a volunteer fireman. And he called her and told her that there was an accident. But he said there was no fatalities. So me and my son, my youngest son, who at the time was 18, we drove up to where the accident was on County M, going between Highway 55 and Neopit. It's a cut across road, and that's where the accident was. And when I got there, my husband was laying in the middle of the road, and I honestly didn't know that somebody passed away in the other vehicle because it was just parked alongside, like they pulled up alongside of the road. Anyway, and we got there, and they flight for life Forrest out, and my husband was gone, and it was very hard. It was very hard losing my husband, seeing Forrest in the hospital again, you know, and it was a hard time because I thought I'd never make it through when he was in Iraq because I, you know, you're a mom and worried about him dying. And you heard so many horror stories about how they left our men over there. You know, and I was always worried I was going to lose my son. And I finally realized if God's going to take him, he's going to take him, whether he's standing next to me or he's 1,000 miles away, you know. So I just had to resign myself to that. And we got through that. And we were coasting along fine, and this happened with the other accident. So it's been a lot.
How do you cope? How do you handle it?
I have my family. If I didn't have my kids, I have my kids and my grandkids all around me. My furthest one lives away in De Pere.
Oh.
So they're all close, you know. And so and I work with Forrest every day, so I get to I've gotten a stronger bond with him. He used to be real close to his dad. And I feel like we've gotten closer since his dad is gone because I work for him. And even if I wasn't paid to work for him, I would still work for him because he's my son, you know.
Forrest,
with my family.
That's awesome.
Do you talk? There are people who have just a fraction of this happen in their lives, and they're depressed. Woe is me. I can't go on. And I mean, that's almost unbelievable, the tragedy that your mom went through and the challenges you face.
And how stoic she is.
Right, right. Do you give
how tough she is.
What I would say, do you share that story? Do you go to church groups? Do you go to neighborhood groups and say, hey, look? Or, I mean, that's really an unbelievable story. And it's just, I mean, you're very happy. You seem like really happy. You're laughing, smiling. Your mom is very strong.
No, I don't go to groups, I don't think. But I do a lot. I have so many much family people around me. Uh-huh. I like talking personal, everything. So I talk through a lot of things with my friends and stuff. It really has me. I have such a close community.
That's wow, awesome. You're an inspiration, boy. Wow.
No question. But the whole community is.
Right.
The whole it's community there, the whole Menominee Nation, in a lot of ways, is inspirational. When one of theirs needs help, man, do they rally. Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it, Forrest?
Oh, yes, sir.
And, you know, our government, I don't want to go on, but some of the guys told me about what their parents grew up in, mm-hmm. how terrible it was, yeah. and the government taking people and putting them in those schools, and right. horrible black mark, I think, on United States history. Right. But then what do the young men do? Raise their right hand, so I'm going to go fight for this country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Jim?
Yeah. I mean, it's you guys are just such an inspiration.
All the respect in the world.
Forrest is the... So the... built the house, and you know, sometimes people come out and then they kind of go away. Is the support still there for you?
Oh, yes, sir. I believe so. Especially with the Menominee veterans, they really help me out anytime I need stuff. Good. They work together and dig through the community and get the legislature pulling. Help anyone who needs help.
Nice,
man. That's great.
Nice.
So great to hear, and especially as we head up on this 4th of July. I mean, there's a lot to be thankful for, and someone like you really reminds us, you know, how good people can be.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm so thankful for the house, the building. This is a great art thing.
Dave, any final thoughts, buddy?
Well, you know, there was another guy that worked on your project. His name was Carl Landwehr. He did a lot of work on the garage. And he's a Vietnam veteran as well.
Three-time Purple Heart.
He was on board from the first meeting. And so I talked to him yesterday, and now Johnny's going to interview him.
For my next book.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much wow. for making the trip yes. down at such an early hour. I'm so impressed with you. God bless you. You're just amazing. This young man, I've just always loved this guy from day one. So you guys are going to stay real close in our lives. Is that okay? Whether you like it or not, because I got your number, brother. Forrest and Mrs. Perez, thank you so very much for an unbelievably inspirational story.
Thank you for having us.
We got to send a quick break back after this.
Bubble Show. Bubble Show. Bubble Show.
Hey, welcome back. Mine on the mayor.
Oof.
You ever have the feeling I'm not worthy?
Yeah.
That other people are a million times tougher and stronger and more resilient and more determined and more everything?
I mean, that poor lady. I mean, I feel yeah. sorry for her son, but then...
Well, you know what? She's not looking for sympathy.
No, she's not.
It's like, nope, she's, no. I'm with my son.
But we can all learn from that. And absolutely. One is, I mean, quit your complaining.
Absolutely.
But the other thing is that how important... the family and this community support is.
No question.
She said that, what, multiple times.
Yep.
How do you get through this? Oh, the family, the community support. So if there's someone in your family or in your community, I was glad to hear him say, Johnny, I was a little worried. Sometimes people, they show up in the beginning and then.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was getting at.
But
yes.
he was like, no.
They're
still there. So I think that's.
Absolutely. That's the point I was trying to make with them. But even what Dave mentioned about his buddy, the Vietnam veteran, didn't know him, didn't have anything. But he made sure he right. came there and helped out.
And to stay the course, you know. Well, that was very, wow. Like I said to Conrad, I was on the other side of the glass for the interview, and I'm like, people got nothing to complain about.
No.
You know, sometimes you get people that are like, you know, wow.
I mean, so impressed with them.
Yeah.
That family, just amazing. So everybody, if anybody's listening out there that helped in that project years ago, thank you so much for everything you did. Forrest has his own house, and
He's got a nice disposition on life.
Great disposition.
Yeah, he's smiling.
Yeah, he's just treasurer for the,
right.
You know? And then the horrible tragedy with his father.
That's
just amazing.
Anyway, yeah. We can all learn from that. And that's why I had asked him if he goes around and gives talks. That guy's inspirational.
No question.
I mean, and it's with his mother, but he said, no, he just kind of does it, keeps going.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it was nice of him to come down here today. We got to get those guys back. That was really super interesting.
I think I see a buddy of mine wandering around out there. Is that Dan? Is that Dan over there? Send him in real quick here. You can get a little preview on this. Big Daddy. Big Skinny.
Good to see you.
Hi, Dan.
What's up, Big Daddy?
How's it going?
Good. Have a seat.
Thank you.
I know you're not the main attraction here for this next segment, but I didn't know you were going to be standing around, so I got to bring you in.
I had nothing else to do today.
Okay, so this is bizarre. This is when you feel old. Okay? This is Dan.
Yes. Hi, Dan.
Big Daddy. He goes by Big Daddy. Do you still go by that?
Yes.
How much weight have you lost?
100 pounds.
That's pretty amazing.
Before we move on, how did you do that? Because we all are here to help John.
I'm drinking what Mino's drinking now. A lot of water, no soda, no beer, and going to the Y every day.
What do you do?
Really?
Cardio.
Okay.
I don't do weights because they're heavy.
I was telling John last week, we were talking about this. My doctor said that if you, there's mental health and there's physical health. And he said physical health, if you want to kind of lose the weight, do the cardio long term. But if it's a mental thing, you should maybe push more weights. That's what he said. I don't know if that's you. You're the expert.
I'm definitely not the expert, but I like doing cardio.
Yeah. But you really changed your diet, didn't you?
Well, yes. Well, when we used to play, you played ball with us and basketball and baseball, and that's tough playing when you're that big.
Yeah. And the thing is, you'd go out afterwards and you would drink beer and you would have wings or something, or you'd have whatever. And
I had to beat Nikki's record of 64.
Jeez. Somebody had to do it.
That's right.
The reason we've got you on this is again about feeling old. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't your son born while you were live on my show?
That is correct. Cannon.
Wow.
23 years ago.
He was in the room as his son is being born, talking to us on our show.
Pretty understanding wife.
Yeah, and I remember Mino and Nick were still yelling, push, Casey, push.
Jeez.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, God, 23. Boy, that was long. I am old.
Unbelievable. So, and we're going to have your daughter-in-law on in just a second, because and Jim and I already talked about this a little bit, I think it's a very, very, very underrated story, the spouses, once the husbands are in and get deployed and things like that. So we want to talk about that.
They are in the military as much as the person in the military.
Absolutely.
It's incredible what they do.
But tell what this little kid who was born live on our show, what he's doing right now.
Cannon or Zach?
Oh, Zach. The other one. Yeah, Zach.
Cannon was born on the show. Zach was born 8 years before that.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
So you want to know what Zach's doing or Cannon?
Both.
Both? Well, Zach is over in Iraq right now, and Cannon, and he's a Chinook helicopter pilot. And Cannon, as you know, was a Green Bay police officer for a while, was not his cup of tea, and decided he wanted to go back to school and got another degree, and now he went a different direction.
Nice.
Wow. How does it make you feel, John?
Old?
No, the kid was born 2 degrees. That's great. I mean, the spouse, whether, there's military women and the spouses are the males.
Right.
I think sometimes we think when we say spouse, we mean the female. But it is amazing how you really summed it up. They're both in the military.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And I was telling Johnny.
They're both serving our country.
Right. And how some of us like to plan, and you really can't plan like. Some of us can in the private sector, right? Like, we're going to live here for 5 years and there. You guys, it can just 2 weeks.
Well, they just bought a house. They're now stationed at Fort Drum. They just bought a house there last year.
Is that New Jersey?
New York.
New York, okay.
And way upstate.
Okay. By West Point, kind of, isn't it?
Almost to Canada.
Yeah, okay.
And, all of a sudden, they're there, have a house to take care of, and 2 years from now, hey, you're going to California. Sell your house, you move.
Yeah.
So you go where they tell you to go.
We had a young lady on. She runs the veteran services for UW Green Bay. And her husband was Navy, life Navy. And he called her one day basically and said, hey, pack up. We're moving to Japan. And she's like, like, oh, you're coming home. Goes, no, I'm still going to be on the ship. So she had to take care of moving in kids, the dogs, kids, furniture to Japan.
Yep. Well, Sarah spent a few weeks getting the house ready to close up because she wanted to come back home to be with family. And now they have people watching the house, taking care of the yard work. And it's a lot of work when you get deployed.
Oh, my gosh. And that's what we want to talk to her about.
Right, because we sometimes don't see that part of it. And it's not covered in the media for whatever. I mean, I think
it's not a sexy whiz-bang kind of thing.
What she does for the Army is absolutely incredible. You just wait till she tells you what she does for the people when they transition from Army to civilian life. It's pretty
incredible.
That's
so important. Family readiness group type things?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Wow, you got to be so proud of your sons.
Oh, Casey and I are very happy. I don't know how we did it, but with us raising them, but they turned out pretty darn good.
Wow. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, knowing what they grew up with, that they wouldn't be on a speedboat going 106 miles an hour across Lake Michigan.
Those days are behind me.
Did we ever figure out how long we thought it would take us? We were going to do a thing, Jim. We were on a radio show. He had this speedboat that was, talk about this boat.
It was just a checkmate, and it went pretty fast, and we like to drive everywhere wide open.
So like Manitowoc to Ludington, is that?
That's what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, I'll figure that out.
I'm not sure how long it would take, but we cruised at 72 miles an hour.
Because I've taken...
Isn't it about 70 miles?
Well, I've taken that... What is that? The Ludington Car Ferry?
Yeah, right.
Manitowoc Car Ferry. I've been the Badger. I've taken that many times, but yeah, it takes forever. You know, 4.5, 5 hours. So, but that thing probably goes at 30... Probably, what, a couple hours?
Yeah, about that. Well, I have a friend that has a boat that goes about 130 miles an hour now, and that's just crazy. I have a fishing boat now. I go 20.
106 is crazy.
It is great seeing you. Tell everybody your real name in case you get any friends out there.
Dan Goldbach.
We've been friends for a long time and so proud of your kids.
So are we.
And we're going to be talking with your daughter-in-law here in just a minute.
She
and by
the
way, tell your beautiful wife, Casey, if you guys have another kid, I'll talk to him during the push thing too.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store. And text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back, Mino and the Mayor. This segment brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. You know, a lot of people have historic homes, and that's the reason they reach out to Pella. Their team of experts can customize windows and doors that match architecture from any era. It really doesn't matter what kind of home you live in. They offer nearly endless possibilities and design flexibilities, sizes, custom colors, finishes, and so much more. Order today. Zero interest up to 48 months. That ends on the 30th. Get a free in-home consultation. Visit PellaWI.com today.
We love Pella. I live in a historic neighborhood over here. I talking to Sarah as our guest, but and we have the house walk coming on, and 6 or 8 homes, and then people come through your home, and many of us.
Was that going on yesterday?
Nope, it's not till August 17th.
I wasn't too far from your place, and there had to be 30 people all in the line walking through a neighborhood, and it almost seemed like that kind of thing.
Could have been a garden walk.
Oh, maybe that's
this is
okay.
This house walk is interior. Okay. I mean, you put a sign in front of your house that talks about it. A lot of people do that. But then there's, I think, 6 homes where they invite you and you get, you know, 1,000 people through your house. But it's pretty cool because people have spent some money making those homes because, you know, they're all 100, 115, 20 years old. And a lot of them have Pella windows because they're not only just great windows, but they also fit the architecture of that time. You know, 1915, things are a little bit different, you know, now. And so it's fun to get those.
How would Milton handle that if you had 100 people come through your house?
They're not coming through my house.
Milton's his dog. He's the wussiest dog in American history.
He's not a wussy. He's just a little shy.
Okay. He's failing his swimming lessons. Oh, he's
just learning. Just give him time, John.
Okay.
John, I will tell you this. Milton learned to swim before you.
Wow.
Okay.
There.
You're hurting my feelings. So now I feel
fine.
Okay.
Okay, you win
all right.
That one.
More importantly, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be a good interview because, as your father-in-law said, there's these people who get deployed, men and women. There's a spouse left back home. And he said, like, you're both in the military.
It feels that way sometimes.
You're both serving your country.
Yeah, it does feel that way sometimes.
So let's talk a little bit. Your husband is a helicopter pilot in Iraq.
Yes. So my husband, Zach, is a Chinook pilot, which is the school bus of helicopters. It's a dual rotor helicopter, and they do a lot of people and equipment moving.
They can move pretty much anything, can't they?
Yes, they can pick up some crazy things. Yeah.
Now, when you guys started in high school.
We did.
Did you have any idea that this was going to be the career path he was going to take?
I did know he wanted to join the military and that he had signed, you know, around the same time that we had started dating, but no idea that this was what the lifestyle was going to be like or how much my lifestyle was going to be impacted by his career choices.
Is there, I would agree, I don't think there's, you know, they tell the enlistee, this is what you're going to do, this is what we're going to do, basic training, da, da, and they don't really tell you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everything I know from, I guess, you know, when he was in basic training, everything I knew was from him. So there's really no, you know, spouse 101 course or anything like that. It's really you learn from your community and, you know, what your spouse tells you. And it takes a lot of communication between the two parties, you know, between me and him to for me to know what's going on. And I also have to be very inquisitive and ask questions and, you know, wonder about what's going on. Otherwise, you know, he's so immersed, it's just natural to him. So how do I know if I don't ask any questions?
But, you know, another one of the things, though, is, too, it's like they don't have any, I don't know, maybe if you found a real nice officer or something, but it's like, well, we just bought a house in New York and we're all settled in. Good. Now you're going to Iraq.
Yes.
Your wife is on her own.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like shocking at times, isn't it?
Yeah, and we
know. And I know when you sign up for it, that kind of, but when it actually does happen to you, it's like, ooh, my world just turned upside down a little bit.
Yeah, and we knew that he was going to deploy pretty shortly after we had gotten there, but the first time he deployed, we were also stationed at Fort Drum in upstate New York, and he took a new job, and they were like, oh, okay, we're going to have you move. We need you there in 3 weeks. So I was like, okay, let's quickly pack everything up. Let's, you know, he had to get there first, so I stayed back and packed up the house and did all that stuff. And then they were like, oh, by the way, you're also going to deploy 2 months later. So it was like, okay, what do I do? Do I go down there and, you know, live somewhere I've never been before where I don't know anybody and, you know, he's gone and it's kind of a chaotic lifestyle. And I ended up just coming home and staying with my parents for a while and putting everything in storage because that was familiar and easier. And, you know, we had to make a decision really quickly on who's going to do what, where are we going to put our stuff. So that was definitely a time where it was rapid planning.
Wow. You're living a life that a lot of people haven't, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we've all moved and, but it was all planned. We're the ones who
never
planned
forced.
It. Never yeah. forced. It was always our, is there support for you? I answer that. And I just, John, the thing we
well,
went to.
Well, he's not National Guard, right?
Correct. He's active duty.
He's active duty. Right. So like a National Guard, you know, everybody's from like within 100 miles.
Correct.
And their FRG programs, Family Readiness Group, are really great. I mean, they're neighbors and people that, you know.
Yep.
But for yourself, mm-hmm. I mean, your best friend might be from Chicago, another one from LA, another one from Kansas. That's tougher, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And so some of our best friends, they're from Michigan. So that's kind of how we connected is, you know, that Midwestern culture.
UP Big Daddy? Are they from the UP, the ones from Michigan, his friends?
Or the real Michigan?
No, they're trolls from the South.
Okay.
Yeah.
The real
but,
Michigan.
Yeah, but bad. They live in Texas now. Yeah. They're stationed over in Texas. And it's, you know, your community is really far spread out. And it's like as soon as you start building a community at a base somewhere, then the Army's like, ooh, sorry, got to go. You know, and it's extremely transient. So my husband's been in for almost 13 years. And we've moved 5 times in those 13 years. And then he's had 2 combat deployments during that time. So that's, you know, essentially 7 moves over 5 years. So as soon as you start to, like, hang pictures on the wall and get settled in and find your favorite grocery store.
And favorite friends, and new friends.
Exactly, yeah. In your community, then it's, you know, time to leave. And you hope that your paths cross at some point in the future. But, you know, most of the time that doesn't happen.
No.
So then it is nice that, you know, your community and your best friends and your family are spread out because then it's like, oh, I wanted to check out that region of the country. I'll go, you know, stay with so-and-so. But when you really need something, you know, they're not there.
What advice would you give if you went and talked to a class or whatever, like an FRG type group, and they were newly married and, you know, just wanted to start a family and their husbands were in and they were in, it wasn't just doing a 2-year hitch or something. They're in kind of for the duration. What would be the main advice you would give them going in?
You know, the same thing to any newly married couple is communication. Like, that's the only way I know what goes on within his world and his job. And you know, you have to ask questions, you have to communicate, you have to make sure you're on the same page, because his mind is always on the job and that always comes first. So if I'm not asking questions or, you know, taking the initiative or being inquisitive, then I'm kind of in the dark, because he has to focus on the job and he has to be, you know.
And you want him to focus on that job.
Yeah. So really it's just communication and, you know, knowing what each other needs.
I think you make a good point that whether they're deployed or not, I mean, that's just good for a marriage. You know, and you'd said that. But somebody who's younger, that you guys met in high school?
Yes.
Okay. That their boyfriend or girlfriend is thinking of a career in the Army, would, I'm just curious as what you would say after 13 years.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, you really have to put it, it requires more effort than your average relationship, because you have to want to be there and you have to know that at the end of the day, it's the two of you against the world. And you know, the, his job always has to come first, but you really have to want to be there even in the very toughest of times.
That's great advice. I mean, you both signed up to be in the military.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Did you have any idea what it was going to be like? Like all these things, like, you know, seven things in 5 years or whatever?
No, I thought it was going to be a lot more glamorous than what it is. You know, like you see the stuff on TV and you think, oh, wow. Like
the military ball.
You think like, yeah, the ball is a great example. You think, you know, it's one way or the other. Oh, you know, the housing's going to be great, or he's going to make so much money and this and that. And it is far from glamorous. It's, you know, yes, it's rewarding and you meet a lot of really great people and you have a lot of experiences you wouldn't have if you weren't out there being forced to go to these tiny towns or little locations, you know, across the country. But it's not as glamorous as it looks. It's a lot of work.
I'm sensing that.
Well, you know, another thing, though, too, at least communication wise versus even 20 years ago, I mean, at least you can FaceTime and do all these kinds of things. I mean, I remember my brothers were in the Army, and it was, you'd get a letter every two weeks or 3 weeks, and that was it. So at least you get that going for you, huh?
We are extremely fortunate. I mean, the USO is very generous, and they provide a lot of internet services and whatnot at the various facilities. So we're able to talk almost every day, every couple of days, things like that. So it's a lot easier to, you know, stay up on each other's everyday life and what's going on in the world and whatnot. But then when there's, you know, things happen, then there's communication blackouts and you're like, like what's going on? I wonder if everything's okay. And, you know, it's a lot of reading between the lines and kind of hoping for that communication.
You know, a lot of the wives I know, two things. One, at first they wanted to know everything the guys were doing. And then after a while, didn't want to know anything the guys were doing. Where are you in that spectrum?
Probably in the middle. I love to know what's going on just to kind of like build a picture in my mind. But at the same time, I'm like, I can't imagine what you're doing to your back. I don't even want to know the things you're doing and, you know, where it's going to land when your joints get hurt.
There's that fine line, isn't there, between the two?
Yeah.
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 So with that, and what about, you know, we talked about the moving and the unknown, but what about just the worry of military versus, I mean, there's people who move in the private sector too, but we don't worry about our spouse being harmed, right? It's pretty safe over here.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when they're deploying, it's kind of like, you know, the dramatic version is they're going to a country where people don't really want them there. And, you know, they will do whatever it takes to harm them in that, you know, whatever location they're at. But yeah, it is a lot of worry. And, you know, I can, on the app that we use to communicate right now, it'll show the message is delivered. And sometimes it's like, oh, if he's not on Wi-Fi, it won't be delivered. So then I'm reading between the lines of like, I wonder, like, is the Wi-Fi down? Did something happen? Like, I wonder why it didn't get delivered. When is he going to get back to me? And a couple of weeks ago, he had a longer flight. It was supposed to be 8 hours. I didn't hear from him for about 12 hours, which was a little bit unusual. You know, and your mind is kind of like, oh, I wonder if everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I wonder what's going on, because nobody's going to call me and tell me. I just have to wait for him. So it's a lot of, you know, waiting around and making assumptions.
Do you put the blinders on, or do you, you know,
lean or in. Do you start digging into like Google and seeing what's going on? Yeah.
Personal observation. You don't have to answer this if you don't want. You've got a good spirit about yourself. You're obviously very healthy. How do you deal with it? Do you work out? Do you yoga? I mean, I'm just,
you know,
because a lot of people have stress, maybe not as much as you.
Asking a good-looking woman if she works out is the oldest line in a bar that there's ever been. Okay,
34 years. So I'm good.
So for me personally, staying busy is really helpful. I work full time, and you know, I volunteer in a few different places, and I make a lot of, you know, intentional efforts to stay connected with our friends who are all over the country. So staying busy and kind of having something to fill that time until he comes back is definitely the way to go.
And that's probably the best advice you'd be able to give to somebody else who is,
yes,
you know, going to be in the earth situation.
Yeah, and really, you have to find something that's your own identity, because it's easy to become, like before I worked full-time, it was easy to become absorbed in his identity, because that controls the aspect, every aspect of our life, where we live, who we talk to, who our community is, what our schedule is like. And, but then what happens when he's not around, then what, who are you, you know? So being able to work full-time or have a volunteer experience, or you know, contribute your time to something else and have your own self-identity is definitely important to keeping.
Absolutely. Do you think you're going to stay in this life, or have you thought about it? You must talk about that.
Yeah, so he's definitely going to stay in until 20. He'll be 22, almost 23 years before he gets out. So when he chose this helicopter job, it was a 10-year commitment.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so we're in it for the long haul.
At least he's always chosen real easy jobs.
Yeah, right.
Like totally. A sniper, helicopter pilot.
Yeah, ones where he's home all the time.
Right. No danger. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Sarah, this has been awesome. Wonderful talking to you. And I think this is just wonderful for the ladies listening out there that haven't experienced this. But, you know, like I said, with the National Guards and Reserves, you never know when they're going to get that call.
Yeah.
So people like yourself and Nicole Stock, you should talk to Nicole, who, like I said, runs the veterans program at UW
She's
Green
awesome.
Bay.
Yeah.
Your stories would be so similar. It's incredible.
You can share that.
And nobody knows these stories.
Right.
Sarah Goldbach, thank you so very much. All the respect in the world, not just for you, but all the wives, all the spouses that are back here, you know, because you got to be in a good mood when you talk to them, and you don't want to be complaining about the whatever, whatever. True?
Yep. Very true.
And
very
a shout out to the father-in-laws, too, right?
Oh, yeah. And to my parents who are, you know, letting me stay in their spare room and whatnot.
Awesome. Sarah Goldbach, thank you so very much. What a great representative for the spouses in the area.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. We're going to set a quick break. Back after this.
Welcome back. Mine on the Mayor. We want to sure thank Sarah for coming in and sharing. Just, I think a lot of people have challenges in their lives, but man, it's really something what they have to deal with the 5 moves in 7 years and the worry about her husband. But, you know, thank God for people like her to be here. And her father-in-law too, who is also in studio, which is great. Talking about the family support that they have. Take care, Sarah. Yeah, that's,
what
she's
a great
something else.
Spokesperson she is,
right?
Huh?
Yeah, she. And people can learn from her. And I think she kind of got into this thing. You know, not that love is blind, but I mean, she signed up for a lot.
Until you really experience it, it's hard to prepare. It just really is. It's really hard to prepare until you experience it. What a wonderful young lady, Sarah Goldbach, and my buddy Dan, and his sons, and good family, good thing all the way around. Now, Mary, who's one of my favorite texters, texted me, and we were talking about, she told me about the guy that runs the dog thing. We're talking about at football games and everything.
Yes.
And she said he'd be glad to talk to us.
I would love to talk to him.
Yes.
And you said they deploy. See, I've seen dogs at games on the field, but when the cheerleaders come or the band comes, they just go up and down, sniff their bags for like weed. Yeah, or guns.
Or explosives.
But I didn't know they were on the field to.
I've never seen that ever happen.
I think, and she said that happened?
The only Wisconsin Canine Services could handle those protesters. Check out their Facebook page. Tim Newtols, a.k.a. Dog Boy, is the owner. He's a retired BCSD dog handler. They work Packer games, golf tournaments, etc. I said, can we get him on? She says, here's his number.
All right.
So
that will be interesting to talk. And hopefully he'll have a couple stories to share with us. And I think if a protester saw a dog, that might change their mind.
Well, I remember years ago, World Series, I want to say it was the Philadelphia Phillies. And it was game 7, and they were going to win the World Series. And in between innings, Philadelphia police came out with their dogs. And I'll tell you what, there were no bases stolen that night. Right. I mean, it was just such, and a lot of people, that's terrible. That conjures up images of, you know, our police using dogs and our people. And you know what? Everybody, the players were like, bring it on. That was great, man. Nobody wanted to mess with them. Right. It was such a show of force.
They're deterrent. And yes.
Total deterrent.
I think that'd be interesting. I'm interested what he says about how often they use them. I didn't even know they used them at golf tournaments.
I've never seen one at a golf tournament.
No, we're at the PGA, and that was a few years. That was a while ago when it was in Sheboygan. I don't remember seeing dogs there, but I think that's a really good idea if they're doing that. So anyway, yeah, we'll talk to him. That'd be interesting to have him on. All right, cool.
Did you ever see the movie No Country for Old Men? Never saw that one?
No.
Okay. Because this was one of the scariest things. This guy stumbled upon, he's in Texas, and he stumbled upon a drug deal that went bad. Okay?
Yeah.
So there the guys were all pretty much dead, except there's the big, you know, thing of a $5 million or whatever.
Okay.
So he takes it.
It's a good plot.
But then he felt bad because one of the guys that was wounded, he's like, you know, agua. He's like, I ain't got no damn agua. You know, he's Texan. That was a Texas accent.
And it was really good.
Yeah. And so I ain't got no dang agua. So then he's in bed that night and he's thinking, why didn't I give him some water? So he fills up a jug, takes it out to him. Okay.
Oh, okay. That. All right.
So the guy's dead.
Right.
The guy's dead, but this time. So he finds the money. Well, all of a sudden he sees these headlights. The main capos of the drug, the cartel people are there and see him and go after him. And they unleash one of their dogs on him. And you want to talk about how movie making, how realistic, because there's this dog who, this dog wasn't screwing around. This dog wasn't acting. Yeah. He was going after somebody. And I want to say it was a like a pit bull or rot or something. And he's going after him. And he jumps in the water to get away from him. And it's just, if that thing came after me, I don't know what I'd do.
Do you think right before the scene, it's like, okay, stuntman.
Something. You know what I mean?
Because I wouldn't do
this. I mean, this dog was for real, the way it was going after this thing. Yeah. So I don't know what they had, you know, again, a T-bone steak here, or come get this. Or
and starve the dog for 3 days.
Exactly. Or a rabbit, you know, throw something out there like that.
Well,
but yeah.
That'd be fun to talk to him because I'm an animal lover, but they can also be very helpful. So,
okay, good. Yeah. Mary said, and Mary's husband was a sheriff's deputy for a lot of years and an Army veteran, Air Force veteran. The canines are at the stadium for hours before every game and sniff every inch.
Yep.
I believe they work the PGA at Whistling Straits.
Didn't see them there, but I've been to many, many games and on the field, and they are sniffing every. They start scratching a bag. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
So, but what I want to ask him, though, are they sitting like in these, like the dog we had on here, Smoke, are they sitting like at the attack position? And then do they, if some guy runs on the field, because you're right, they would beat any.
Oh, man, they would chase him down. I think that'd be kind of fun to watch.
You know what?
I hate to sound like that guy, but be honest.
But if you were the guy, and let's say you weren't drunk, you just wanted to protest climate change or something, and you saw the dog, would you go out there?
No.
No, me neither.
Not a chance.
No way.
Not even a, like I said, when Smoke was sitting here that day,
it's like,
I would not mess with that thing.
Nope, I'll stay here. I'll just send a letter. I'll write a letter to the editor. I'm not going to run out there.
No,
protest,
so I really want to talk to him because that's interesting stuff.
That's cool.
What are the best dogs for that? It used to be Dobermans. You don't see Dobermans much anymore.
We had German Shepherds.
Okay, for their force?
Seven of them.
My brother, who was an MP in Europe, worked with the Polish army. Okay, this was in Germany or France. And they had these dogs that were just unbelievable. Some kind of a, I don't know if it was a Russian Polish kind of dog.
That sounds tough.
But they would go rabbit hunting, my brother and that would, and they would take the rabbits and they would just toss them into the cage and the dog wouldn't move, just wouldn't make a sound. And that Polish guy would say a word and that rabbit was gone in like 3 bites. He said they were unbelievable.
The dogs, I told you I did that. We went down to Djibouti. Sorry,
those dogs would love to tackle a protester.
Right. When we went down, we went to...
You went to Djibouti?
Djibouti and...
That's the...
Kuwait. Anyway, and they put on a dog show for us. But those weren't German Shepherds. They were stockier. They weren't pit bulls, but they were like a combination of the two. And those are the dogs. And they threw a ton of body punches. They would just jump and just hit you. They wouldn't bite. They would just... And they would knock anybody over. I mean, at that speed. And they probably weighed... I mean, those dogs had to weigh one... 150, 170. And think about that speed coming at you and then going airborne for like 4 or 5 feet and hitting you like in the upper body.
Well, like the one in that video that hit me. It knocked me right off my feet.
They do.
Yeah.
All right, that'll be fun to get him on. Yes. We'll talk about the more great things about dogs.
Lee Larson joining us, X1918 Ministries. We've got Rebecca Rockhill from American Red Cross. But blood donation needs. Stay with us.
Stopped into a church. I passed along.